we all have routers from our ISPs, our various ISPs, mm-hmm. right? Have you guys gone into those routers and changed the admin password?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing I do.
Right.
I change it to password.
With an at sign.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'll try that.
Oh, dear God. That's because you're
and
elite.
An exclamation right, mark at right. the end.
And a zero for the O.
Right.
But I do it in Cyrillic, so it makes it easier for the guys.
So it makes it easier.
Passwords.
So cold.
So we got a nice big collection of stories here post-Thanksgiving.
That's never good news.
Yeah.
No.
It always seems like the holidays brings out the crazy security issues.
There's one thing about doing this show is we're never going to be starved for content.
No.
We're going to talk about, 10?
Yeah.
10 different situations in which people were not listening to security this week.
Mm-hmm. So let's put 4 minutes on the clock.
Doop, doop, doop.
Yeah.
4 minutes.
All right, where do we start?
I think we start sky. Start with the sky.
The work sky. Our way down.
Yep.
I've never heard of a sky router.
So very big in England.
Yeah, very much a UK router. So if you have internet service in the UK, you probably have a sky router. Either a Sky 4, Sky 3, Sky 5. Those are the models that are generally out
there. So it's more like a home router kind of thing?
Yeah, it's more like, it is, exactly. It's a home router.
It's like a TP-Link in other places.
Yeah, and you'd get them from, I think, British Telco. So BT, I think, puts out Sky routers. You could buy your own Sky router if you wanted to. So there's a bunch of different places you might have one in your house. You wouldn't see them much in the US.
Okay. So what happened with the Sky routers?
Nothing good.
Yeah, nothing good. So it's interesting with the Sky routers. This, you know, a lot of people get these routers from their ISP. They just turn it on, plug it in, and they got internet, right? So they don't worry about resetting these passwords. The reason most people don't worry about it is because you can't get access to the device externally. So I can't find, say, your IP address, Carl, at your house and try and connect to your router because your router is going to be like, hey, listen, this traffic's coming from the outside world. No go. Right. I'm not going to allow that to happen. So most of the time you're okay. In this particular case, what happened is, we all know JavaScript, right? So for those of you who aren't programmers who are listening to this podcast, JavaScript is just a programming language that you can run code in a browser.
Yeah.
So you can put
it's been around as long as browsers have been around.
Oh yeah. And JavaScript's awesome. Super flexible.
Said no one ever.
Yeah, and it was written in a day by a couple of guys who, you know, they had a deadline. They needed a language for their browser.
JavaScript became popular because it was the one that was supported by all the major browsers at a time when we needed a language for all browsers.
Sure. Right.
And so that's why it's evolved quite a bit since then.
Oh, heck.
With frameworks.
Yeah.
But no one really enjoys it.
Except for hackers. Hackers love Java. And JavaScript. So what's nice about this is, so imagine you go to a website, and when you're visiting that website, you get a piece of JavaScript. Now it's running on your browser, which is on the inside of your network.
Yes.
This JavaScript then tries to reach out to your router and log in with the password of the username of admin, password of admin.
From the inside.
From the inside.
Ooh. Okay.
Now there's this thing called SOP. Which is supposed to stop that from ever happening. It's the SOP is same origin policy. So every browser goes, listen, if you're a piece of code running in the browser and you're coming from bleepingcomputer.com,
right.
I'm not going to allow you to reach out to microsoft.com. You can't do that. You can always reach out to bleepingcomputer.com.
That's called cross-site scripting.
Correct. So, and there's a lot of attacks doing that where I can steal cookies and log on sessions and that sort of stuff. So it's the reason the browsers by default now are like, listen, if you're not coming from the same origin, I'm not allowing you to reach out and talk to that location.
Right. So they can't go, there's an IP address that everybody has, 127.0.0.1, which means this computer.
Right. Right. So I couldn't say, you know, hey, we're going to go to evil.com and I'm going to run a piece of JavaScript. And any time that JavaScript tries to reach out to do something, it can only go to evil.com. You can't go anywhere else. Okay. So right. that's good to understand. So this attack wouldn't typically work. It would reach out to your local router, which is usually 192.168.0.1 or something along those lines. It'd reach out to an IP address that's not evil.com. Mm-hmm. And it would try and log in with admin, and your browser would go, whoa, you can't do that. Not allowed.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
What's interesting about this attack is it was coupled with what's called a DNS rebind attack.
All right. We talked about DNS from when Facebook went down because of some domain name system fudge or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what's DNS rebinding?
So every time you make a request, let's say for, you know, evil.com or bleepingcomputer.com, right? Your computer has no idea what the IP address, the actual address of the web server that's going to answer your request is out on the internet.
Right.
So we go out and we resolve it and we come back. The DNS rebind attack, I'm evil.com, let's say, and Patrick is the web browser coming out to me.
Yeah.
I also manage the DNS for evil.com. So I have the web server that's feeding you up the bad JavaScript, and I have the DNS server.
Yeah.
On the DNS server, I set the TTL, which is the time to live for the request, to zero, or let's say very small, 1 second.
Okay.
So what that means is every second, I'm going to be killing off the IP address, and you're going to continually come back and have to resolve it. Hey, evil.com, what was the web server? Hey, evil.com, what was the web server? Every second your browser has to do that. Because I'm killing off I'm saying the cache only lives for 1 second.
Yes.
So what I do in between those requests is I then tell you the IP address is 192.168.0.1. So when you make that request to me to say, hey, evil.com, what's your IP address for the web server? I give you the IP address of your local router. Now it's same origin. It's fine. You're going to evil.com, which is your router now, and it logs in. Does all the nefarious things it needs to do.
I've actually done that. As a programmer, I have some software that lives in my home, and I wanted to sort of integrate with, I wanted it to be available with a name, not just an IP address. So I basically put a CNAME record, which means, you know, something dot
what'd you call
whatever
me?
Your domain is. You heard me.
Canonical.
So... something dot whatever your domain is, and I set it to a local address that I had, you know, pinned this particular computer in my home, given it this static IP address, so it never changed, and it worked.
Yep. Yeah, and it worked really well. DNS rebind attack. If you look out on the internet for DNS rebind, you'll find all sorts of pieces of malware leveraging DNS rebind. Evil Corp controls the DNS. Oh, actually, Evil Corp's one of the malicious people out there. But if Evil Corp out there controls DNS, then they can shift you around any IP they want. It's not like you're going to, you know, Microsoft.com and trying to manipulate their IP addresses, right? Yeah. So how do you get them to go to your web server as evil.com? Phishing, social engineering, that sort of stuff.
Right.
So it comes back to, if you have a Sky router, patch it. Although, oddly, it did take... who was it? I don't know who owns the Sky router. Sky Broadband. There you go.
Skynet.
Yep. Yeah. Skynet. They had to bring somebody from the future to fix this problem, which works nicely.
That's what you think. It hasn't happened yet. All right. If you got a Sky router, patch it. Let's move on.
TSA. Everyone's favorite subject.
You know what TSA stands for, right?
I don't want to say on the radio.
Toothpaste stealing assholes.
Oh, there it is. There it is. They must have so much toothpaste at this point. It's got to be a gray market in toothpaste.
And that's, you know, that joke isn't funny anymore because they don't. Do they still steal toothpaste? I think by now everybody knows.
My brother worked at Delta for a long time, and he said he's seen people bring chainsaws and leaf blowers and other things, try to bring them through TSA, and they all get seized.
Weird.
So it's not just toothpaste.
That's awesome. Can't leave home without your leaf blower.
So what happened with TSA?
So holidays are upon us. People are traveling. The world is kind of opening up, and everybody's starting to look at, hey, you know what? I haven't traveled in a long time. I'm wondering if my TSA pre-check is still valid.
All right.
So for those of you who don't travel a lot, TSA PreCheck is a fantastic thing where the TSA do a background check on you, and you can go through the TSA line actually accelerated much faster than the normal line and
be. It's a special line just for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to take a lot of the stuff out of your bag. Like, I don't have to take laptops out of my bag. I don't have to take my shoes off. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a thing here called Global Entry,
yep.
which sort of includes TSA PreCheck.
That's how I got mine.
So,
but yeah, Global Entry has a thing where you can go to a kiosk when you come back to the United States, and you can skip the customs line.
So, funny story about Global Entry. I was traveling to London. And I just got Global Entry. I was super excited. It's global. You could go anywhere.
I see. And I know where this is going.
Come from anywhere.
And I went to the customs agent, and I'm like, and he's like, you got to sign all these forms. And I'm like, I got Global Entry. And he's like, listen, you're from America, aren't you? He's like, global doesn't mean global. It means can come home.
It's like the World Series.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just for coming back to America.
Right. He's like, from away. You still have nothing here. Please sign these forms.
Yes.
Stand you bloody line. Chucklehead.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
You bloody chucklehead. So this is just this is really a social engineering scam.
So if you receive an email from the TSA saying, hey, your pre-check is about to expire, or
or an email about anything from anyone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Right. So this, what's funny about this is that on the website that they're sending out, so this is malicious people sending out a website. They're a bunch of .coms, but they send out the link to the website saying you need to renew your TSA. They're charging only through PayPal, which is weird because TSA doesn't do that. And B, they're charging twice as much as it costs to renew your TSA. So $140 instead of the...
So I have an analogy from the real world for this, which is if you wanted to go to Best Buy and buy something, you walk to Best Buy and you buy it. If you want to go to register your car, you go down to town, City Hall, and you register your car. If someone walks up to you and says, hey, I'm from Best Buy, I'd like to sell you something, you don't buy it.
No, of course not. And you say, get out of here, you nutter.
That works for email and phone calls and everything else, which is if it comes to you, suspect it.
Right.
If you go to it, it's probably safer.
Microsoft will never call you about a virus on your computer. Ever.
The IRS will never send you an email saying that, you know, your debt is cleared and click here to agree.
And your car warranty is really not about to expire.
Now this see what are these reality check. Do? Right.
Reality check day here at security this week.
That's awesome. So be careful.
And if you get random Facebook messages from your friends that say, hey, check this out with a link. Don't click it.
Yeah, you should
never check it out.
People should always add context to every email to let them know that it was personally sent by them. So, for example, Dwayne and I work together. If I have to send him things, which I do all the time, I don't say, hey, check this link out.
Nope.
Yep, because never.
That invites him to call me, and that might be a good test. Invites him to call me and say, did you actually send this to me? Right. I say, check out this. I think it might apply to this project. I really thought this was interesting. It doesn't have to be much, but it has to add enough context to convince the person it actually came from me.
Well, right. Include something real that only you and that person know.
There are codes that Patrick and I use back and forth too.
That's a good idea.
From games we've played.
Yeah. So if we
check out this cheesecake link.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I might include the name of a character he's had in one of our games that we've played you know, something like that.
Or it'll be
Stinky.
Question.
Yeah. Click here.
By Goth's hammer, I declare this is not fishing.
Then I know it's
by
okay. Rohammer. I'll click on it. Right, by Rohammer.
So this next one you've already kind of talked about. You spilled the beans on this. The Emotet has doubled their size since Resurgence.
All right, so what's Emotet? Did we talk about Emotet before?
We have. We've mentioned it before. I mean, I want to say back in late July, maybe early August, Emotet was kind of all over the place. And so Emotet is think of it, I was explaining it before, as like the Uber of malware, right? So if you have this really nasty, cool piece of malware you want to deploy to people, you can get on the Emotet boards, forums, trade, talk to them and be like, hey, I want to buy some of
malware delivery as a service.
Right. Right.
Jeez.
And that's pretty much it. So they do a great job at, you know, evading AV, evading endpoint detection. You know,
AV? Antivirus?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, they do a great job at avoiding, you know, flagging anything, et cetera, so that they can deliver your malware, which is nice. It's nice they do that. It's a good business.
And this story says their infrastructure has almost doubled since Resurgence was confirmed.
Yeah, apparently business since is going when? Well. July, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, not only doubled, but they've actually improved some security. So good for them.
So more career advice for criminals brought to you by Security This Week.
Right. If you have a nice piece of malware you've been working on, call the Uber.
Screw that. Go get a job at Emotet. Yeah. Apparently they're hiring.
Right, yeah, exactly. that's so awesome.
All right, so that's sort of like a public service announcement. You know, just be careful because
keep your AV up to date. Yep.
What does it mean for you, Joe, computer user, or Josephine?
So, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of this distills down to the same sort of cybersecurity hygiene we've been pushing here. Always make sure AV is up to date. Always make sure you have antivirus of some sort, right? Okay. Run Microsoft Defender because it's free and it's always getting better and better. So. And careful what you click on.
Speaking of Microsoft, our next story is to do with Microsoft Office 365.
Yeah. So, Microsoft has been really pushing to, be the foremost thought leader in protecting against all sorts of things, right? Ransomware, viruses,
yeah.
You name it. In that effort. They do have Defender. We've talked about Defender before, but they have a higher level of protection, which is their advanced persistent or their advanced threat protection, ATP.
Okay.
I always confuse that with APT, advanced persistent threat, Microsoft's advanced persistent threat.
It's because that's where your head is at.
ATP is also the mitochondrial powerhouse energy source. All energy, food energy, muscle energy, whatever in your body comes down to ATP. It's like the gasoline of your body.
And it's a gasoline additive, I think, for cars.
It actually is. That is STP. Wow, we're all over the place on today's show.
It's going to be a long one.
We're allowed. Okay, so Microsoft's doing their bit. They're trying to stay out of the headlines by making headlines.
Yes, some more moral of the story. Patrick, what should we do?
So we should be careful about convenience. It is the enemy of security.
Thanks, Patrick.
Yes. So I've been thinking about this. The world we live in, people are like, how can it get any more complicated? The world we live in, the threats keep evolving.
Right.
And as the threats evolve, the defenses evolve.
Yeah.
But what people should think about is, and this isn't comforting, I'm sorry, but it's kind of like, it's easy to live on, you know, a tropical island with lots of, you know, sources of food and water, and the temperature never gets down too low. And if things go wrong, oh, well, I'll just go find a papaya or an apple or something like that. But if you're on Mars or Venus, then there's a lot of systems to protect you from the cold and the heat and the radiation and all these things.
Except if you're
and while
Venus.
They protect you, with you don't one of them fails,
you don't
screwed.
Want to be on Venus.
Nobody.
Right.
Mars, okay.
Well, I'm just saying, Mars is very calm compared to Venus.
Yes.
But those things can keep you safe. But when they fail, like we saw with the Sky Routers, then you're screwed.
Right.
And so it's going to be an ongoing battle. It's going to be an ongoing war. And you got to pick vendors. You got to use patching. You got to use the right solutions. And Microsoft's trying their best to be in that game and do the right thing. I never thought I would say that Microsoft's AV would be the best and the thing that I would use, but that's what I'm using.
Yeah. So do you remember last week when we talked about the Gmail app on iPhone?
Yeah.
And how it was not a good idea? Well, I have since removed it. And I just tried using the Mail app that comes on the iPhone, and that completely choked and died. And because of all my emails. So I installed Outlook because one of you guys uses that Outlook.
I use Outlook on my iPhone.
I use the app, the iPhone app.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So
Outlook.
Well, no, he doesn't. He's kidding. He's smiling.
People's Front of Judea. No, Judean People's Front.
Sire, the
peasants. I'm never going to tell you the truth about what I use, Carl.
Yeah. Sire, the peasants are revolting. They certainly
they
are.
And they stink too.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Outlook. Yeah, it's it works. And when I brought that up, Kelly, my wife, said, I thought Outlook sucked. And I said, yeah, but that was like on Windows 95.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
And it was a totally different app. This is an app called Microsoft Outlook. That's about the only thing it has in common with the old desktop app. It actually works really well.
It does. Yeah. I use that. You know what's interesting is Defender. So we were talking about Defender here, and Microsoft's upgrading the Defender protection for anybody who's using Office 365, which is awesome, to their ATP Defender.
Yes.
But what's really cool is I was also reading what else they're looking to do, and they're looking to add Defender as an endpoint on your Mac devices as well.
Ah,
so you can have,
cool.
You'll be able to have antivirus with the latest and greatest from Mac. So that'll actually be pretty neat.
And pretty soon you're going to be able to run Android apps on Windows 11.
Oh, I'm excited about that.
Which is apparently right now you need to get some sort of Amazon thing to make that work, but
yeah,
but it's coming.
Yeah, you can download BlueStacks to run Android on your Windows box.
I've done that.
What's interesting is we just talked about the DNS Rebind attack, and originally Bleeping Computer reported on the DNS Rebind attack because it happened with BlueStacks.
So. Okay. All right, well, let's move on to my favorite company in the whole world, GoDaddy.
GoDaddy!
Not really.
They're not in the news as much as they used to be.
I don't like them so much.
No?
Yeah, they're not. They're not in the news for a good reason today.
No.
Yeah,
no.
So what happened to them?
Unfortunately, there was a data breach.
1.2 million WordPress customers.
Yeah. And sadly,
If you don't use GoDaddy, but you use WordPress, you're still
no problem. It sounds like it's GoDaddy's hosting environment for WordPress. So if you use GoDaddy and host with GoDaddy, you could be a part of this breach of 1.2 million customers.
Yeah, it's not a very good sign for a company that, you know, their whole job is giving you, you know, taking away the development stuff.
You had one job.
Yeah, you had one job.
I gave you one thing to do.
And you totally screwed it up.
WordPress is bedeviled. If you use WordPress in a bland, boring way, you can usually avoid some of the worst effects of it. Mm. But when your credentials are just, you know, hacked from the source, there's really very little you can do.
Yeah.
Go change your passwords. Go, you know, make sure you've got strong authentication. Two-factor authentication would be better if they offer it. I haven't checked whether they offer it.
Yeah, and it looks like in this particular case, you're absolutely right, Patrick. This was a compromised password, right? So somebody had access to the provisioning system in their legacy code base. I love how they always say legacy code base. It's like,
yeah,
it was out there. It couldn't happen today.
It was out there and it was old. It still had access to everything and it was still accessible. But you know what? It's legacy. Like, okay, well, probably
it's
still needs to be protected.
That's a great buzzword to sort of wave your hand and say, you know, it's expected because it's legacy.
Right, right.
Meaning nobody's looking at it anymore.
So why is it up? I don't ask that question. But that gave access to, if I remember correctly, SSH keys, all sorts of other things, FTP usernames and database usernames and passwords, et cetera, et cetera. So GoDaddy's
obviously playing. Use DNSimple, people. Yep. DNSimple.com. Get out of GoDaddy and use a company that doesn't trick you into buying products that you don't want.
There you go. Now we're going to get emails from GoDaddy.
All right, so let's talk about a mighty wind.
Oh, wind generators.
Yes.
Wind turbines. So not the turbines themselves, but the company Vestas that makes wind turbines?
They're one of the two biggest manufacturers of wind turbines in the world. And they had to shut down. This is more of a nuisance for them because they're one of the two companies that makes most of the wind turbines you'll see.
Yeah.
So it was, what kind of attack was it?
So this, they're a little bit closed lip on what the attack was, but for the most part, it looks like another ransomware attack. So they noticed, access to their systems and decided to shut IT systems down. So not really sure. It could be almost anything. Interesting. There was a, I don't remember. Did we talk about it on here? There was another actual electric company that had wind turbines that got breached by a hacker. Small company out in the West. Can't remember the name of them. I'll have to find the article. Anyways, they found the hackers on the systems. The hackers had broken into, 12 of their wind turbines, the systems that were running those turbines. And the hackers actually then patched the environment and cleaned it up so that no other hackers could get on.
That's smart.
When the FBI came in, it was like, hey, you should get them off this system. They were like, you know what? They're actually kind of making the servers better. So we're going to leave them alone. And they did. They left them with access to the systems.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Let's unpack that for a second. So there's two reasons for hackers to do that. Yeah. One is good, but they still shouldn't be hacking in. And one is bad. So the best case scenario is they just feel like Robin Hoods and they want to go out and help. They're going to force people to be secure.
Right.
You're still going to go to prison.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you get caught, it's not a good look, not a good thing to do.
No.
Very much more likely is that they're hackers who are using resources in a way that isn't been detected, and they just want to keep anybody else off those resources, and that's why they patched.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's what happened in this particular case. Is they had Bitcoin miners or Ethereum miners or whatever that they were running in the background, and the wind turbine company was like, "Listen, we actually are getting better efficiencies out of those servers with the coin mining going on because they've maintained the server." So
it's a service they just provide. It's a fee they provide.
That's right.
Right.
It's a service.
Interesting enough. But in this particular case, I mean, we'll keep an eye on it. It shut down the manufacturing of wind turbines, but
which is bad.
Didn't actually shut down any critical infrastructure, which is good.
All right. So now we have a very practical story. And it's so practical that while I was reading it, I checked to see if my Windows update was available, and it turns out it is. So I got to go. I'll see you.
Oh, no, we already took care of that for you, Carl.
Oh, I'm sure you did. So this is a new Windows Zero Day exploit. It's a public exploit that lets you become an admin.
At least Windows 11 is safe. Oh, wait.
No.
It's not. I know it's not.
No.
Yeah, I know it's not.
Yeah. Ouch.
And it's server as well.
Yeah. So for even those worse. Of you who love tracking CVEs, this is CVE 2021-41379, if you want to go look this up. So the interesting thing about this is Microsoft patched this partially, right? Before. So let's back up. So this is a zero-day exploit that is for privilege escalation. So PrivEsc is where you're a regular user and then you become an admin.
Which means you need some access before. It's not going to give you entree into the system. You have to have some access. So if Dwayne's already on a system, he can escalate and now he's an admin. That's useful and important, but it's not the first step.
Right. Right, exactly. The weird one about this, and this happens all the time, right? Security researchers see that Microsoft or whoever patches a particular vulnerability, and then they obviously go and patch what's called patch diffing. They find out what changed. What did Microsoft go in and what code did they write to fix the problem?
Yeah.
And then they noodle it around and go, I could probably bypass that. I can probably write something that makes that patch not relevant. And this is what this researcher did.
Wow.
Went in and said, you know what? I can make that not relevant, and made it not relevant and created the zero day, which is normal for researchers, right? And then a researcher typically will go to Microsoft and say, hey.
Off with his head.
No, no.
Is this Missouri or not?
I think we
Tomahawks.
So typically a researcher, the next step is to report it. You go to Microsoft, say, hey, I realize I can bypass this. You got to be careful. Next patch should have this fix. In this particular case, the researcher decided to release it out on the internet. Why, you might ask?
Yeah.
Because he's not a researcher. He's a hacker.
No, because Microsoft decided to lessen their bounty pay for people who find issues.
Oh, I heard about this. heard about this. Yeah, they're mad because they're only going to get, you know, whatever,
$1,000 instead of $10,000.
Yeah,
it's still criminal in my opinion,
right?
To release these things out to the world.
Oh yeah,
and you know, we were just talking with a Microsoft guy on the ASP.NET team, Richard Campbell and I on .NET Rocks. And, you know, they basically have their whole .NET programming system open source, and it's on GitHub. And so people who find vulnerabilities have the ability to just, you know, publish a pull request. In other words, put it out there.
Yeah.
And you know, this guy, Dan, actually said, please, 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 if you find a security bug, don't just publish it on GitHub. Send it to us. Right. And in fact, in GitHub, when you check in, you know, when you put in a new pull request, it actually says, if this is, it's like, if this is an emergency, please hang up and dial 911. Yeah. Right? It's like, that's not what you do. So yeah, I can see how that could happen unintentionally, but it sounds like this was intentional.
Yes. Yeah, this was absolutely intentional.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, I found your dog. And I didn't think the reward was enough, so I just let him go on the highway.
Right. Yep.
It's not right.
It's not right.
Although as hackers, we do love to see somebody put a pull request in that says, hey, I found a way to bypass the login. You guys should fix this. And you're like, oh, that's money. I'm going to take that. I'm going to use that. Yeah. So for any other projects, please, you know, continue putting your security issues up there.
Right. All right. Let's talk about Exchange. Speaking of Microsoft.
I know. They're getting slammed all week.
So Microsoft having another bad week.
Exchange has had a bad year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Microsoft Exchange, for those who've never heard of it before, is something that used to be more relevant before the internet, I would say. When people had corporate email and internet email and messaging, and they needed to do all this kind of stuff, and they needed some sort of central server inside their company to manage all this.
He's calling us
messaging.
Old.
Yeah, I'm before just the before same the age cloud. As you guys. But I remember Exchange being, you know, big and ugly. And
it was the most mission critical server in most environments 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If Exchange went down, business stopped. Now, it's still a big deal if email goes down, but a lot of people are hosting somewhere else. The thing is, Exchange is behind Office 365 and M365 and all those offerings. So it's still there. It's just been cloudified.
Sadly, Microsoft is really good about patching Office 365. So if you're hosted up with Microsoft and up in the cloud, generally you're pretty good, right?
So this was an RCE bug. And can you remind us what that is again?
Remote code execution. So anything marked as RCE, you should be scared of.
That's the first step.
Yeah.
In that two-step process.
Right. So RCE means they can run generally any piece of code they want on your computer, any application, on your computer or in this case, Exchange server. So that could be, they could run calculator, which wouldn't be super useful, or they could run a reverse shell, which would give them access to the box just like they were sitting at the keys.
So to call back to what we were just talking about, the RCE typically is the first step to get on the box, and then you need an escalation of privilege, a PrivEsc, like we just talked about.
Yes.
And that's the 1-2 punch. I get on your system, I run code, but I typically run it as something unprivileged and something that can't do big things.
Right.
But then if I can couple that with a PrivEsc, well, now I'm in.
Like the one we just talked about.
Yeah.
Which affects all Microsoft servers.
Right. Hey, put these two articles together.
Yeah.
And you can drop an emetet and...
Another public service announcement for criminals.
This stuff writes itself.
Brought to you by
hackers.
Yeah.
So this particular issue, this is CVE 2021-42321. There is a patch for it, and it is only affects on-prem Exchange servers. So if you are the company that decides, hey, I want to run my own Exchange server and I feel like managing it and maintaining it and that sort of stuff, good for you. But you have to make sure 1,000% that you're patching as soon as these patches come out.
That's going to become a thing of the past in the next few years, I think.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, I always used to love managing my Exchange server. The late nights rebuilding.
I used to teach Exchange.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Microsoft official curriculum. Yep.
But, you know, but so moral of this story, if you have an Exchange server, it's hosted on-prem, patch it. Even if patch it's a hybrid server, patch it.
Patch it.
Just patch it.
All right, let's talk about this picture of bees.
Bees.
I don't know, honeybees. Is that because of a honeypot? What is this story?
It is. Although me personally, I'd probably put Pooh Bear up there. But, you know, whatever. It's more synonymous with honeypot than honeybees.
Not as much pants, though.
He's a bear of very little pants.
So honeypots, for this article is about honeypots. What's interesting about honeypots is lots of people put servers up on the internet that are not quite secure. But then there are security researchers who put computers up on the internet that are not quite secure because they want to see what the latest threat actors are doing, right?
Right.
So, you know, hey, what type of attack are they using? What are they trying to deploy first? You know, that sort of stuff. So in an effort to determine those types of things, researchers have put up 320 honeypots. So 320 different servers with different services, all hosted either in clouds, etc., trying to see, A, what do threat actors do? How quickly do they breach them? And what are the tactics they use? Okay, so I ask you guys, and you guys already probably know, but in 24 hours, how many servers do you think were breached?
I would have without reading this article, I would have said 100%.
Wow, holy moly, Patrick!
I'm cynical.
You are cynical.
How many?
8%.
85.
80.
80%.
256 servers, and I'm pretty sure.
And the other 20% were hacked so well they didn't notice.
Maybe you're right, Patrick. So interesting enough, these servers obviously put out very juicy protocols. So
they had a lot of sweet honey to attract them bees.
They did. So RDP, remote desktop protocol, was available on a lot of these servers. SSH, of course, which is the secure shell protocol, and SMB, which is server message block protocol. So SMB is for transferring files. SSH is for logging into usually a Unix Linux system to, you know, control it. And then remote desktop obviously is getting a remote desktop in Windows. So these are, you know, these from our standpoint, when we're breaching companies, we're always looking for these types of protocols. Because when we see those, we know we have vectors of either brute force or ways of doing.
So the 20% that didn't get hit in the 24 hours, maybe they were having less, you know, lucrative protocols or things that are a little harder to exploit. Or maybe they were just, they weren't as susceptible to the script kiddies who find these things in 24 hours.
Or
advanced threats don't scour the internet. They're usually looking for something that they're targeting.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is script kiddies.
No, you're absolutely right. It's script kiddies, but it's probably also, if I had to guess, it's probably also botnet providers.
So it's the bottom of the pyramid.
Yeah, the people who are looking to just grab as many random computers as possible to run their code, it's not a targeted attack. Unfortunately, hey, if it were a targeted attack, you should patch. Make sure you're strong passwords and patch.
Hey, you know, I'm feeling a little amorous. I think I'll go check out the UK Department for Transport website for some ideas on how to spice up my love life.
Strangely enough, that would have worked yesterday.
All right, so this is the story you've been waiting for, obviously. UK government what's transport funny? Website caught showing porn.
Aww.
Wow. And they actually show some sort of blacked out, pictures of what people saw yesterday when they went to this website. But it wasn't that website. It's not like somebody went into their website and changed the files and, you know, right?
No.
It was a DNS thing, right?
That question is whether they took over an instance in Amazon or they actually edited the DNS.
Yeah.
Whether they hacked the DNS, that's a bigger deal.
Yeah, and this isn't new, honestly. There have been U.S. government websites with adult content on them as well, and Viagra ads, and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, somebody hacked Facebook and tried to rename them Meta. But wait, I'm being told that's real.
Never mind. I'd like to redact that. Yes. So yeah, no, it's, you know, so I guess this just points out a watch where you browse on the web, but B, if so. You know, if even government websites, you know, I know NASA in the past has been hacked by DNS hijacking, etc. The understanding, and actually that's kind of a common theme throughout the, all of our articles today, is like DNS is an important infrastructure piece of the internet. There are a lot of, like Carl's brought up before, there's a lot of really good ways to secure DNS. And I think we're seeing that now's the time to make sure that those things happen.
Yeah. I think we're going to call this show UK government porn site. Because that'll really attract a lot of attention.
Case, yeah. Just in case you're feeling randy.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Enter password one to enter.
All right, guys. Glad you had a good holiday, and we'll see you next week.
You too. Likewise. Soon. Thanks, guys.
Do you think there'll be new stories?
Might be a quiet week.
Pretty sure.
Bye-bye.